Such a good first hour. Smooth and easy. Hammered the NBA. So I'm going to change up on you right now. I'm Jim Rome. Welcome back. Program brought to you by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. If you're on hold, hang in there. Guaranteed telephone call is coming up. Phone number is toll free, 1-800-636-8686. When I say I'm changing up for hour number two, what I mean is I'm going to start by talking some Major League Baseball. We are joined by a baseball columnist for the New York Post. He is an MLB Network insider. Lots to cover with Joel Sherman. Joel, good to have you back. How are you?
Good to be back, Jim. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks for doing it, Joel. Let me start with the Yankees. They've been obviously decimated, Joel, by injuries, yet they're still just two games out of first in the AL East. Aaron Boone is always going to take a lot of heat when things don't go well. So in your mind, Joel, how much credit does he deserve for the season and how it's gone so far?
I almost feel, Jim, like you deserve credit if in reverse you were going to take the blame, and if they were sitting at like 16-21 right now, he'd be getting a lion's share of the blame, even with all the injuries. I think there's something very similar going on. The Nationals are kind of devastated by injuries, and I think their leadership and culture is not that great, and they're kind of underperforming what talent is still there. And, of course, one of the things we're seeing is Davey Martinez, their manager, is on the hot seat. So I always think if you're surviving it well, like the Yankees are, I mean, I think even to some degree the Pirates have, I think the Pirates have used the injured list one more time than even the Yankees this year, and in a tough division, they're surviving it. I think some of the credit's got to go to the manager.
Now, Joel, you mentioned culture. Every single time I have a manager or a coach or a front office person on this program these days, the word culture inevitably comes up. It seems like front offices and coaches are obsessed with it. How would you describe the culture of the Yankees?
Well, I wrote about this a few days ago, Jim, which is just, look, they've had a winning record now for this. If it continues this year, I think it's 27 straight seasons, every year since 1993. And they've either made the playoffs or been in contention at the worst until the final week of the season in all those years. And I assume one of these years they're going to win 76 games. But until I see it, I'm going to assume they'll figure it out. I watched them figure it out in a year where they needed pitchers named Aaron Small and Sean Chacon to pitch great, and Aaron Small and Sean Chacon pitched great. They were in the race until the last week of the season when they had a lineup in, I think it was 2013, with Robinson Cano and what seemed like a bunch of, you know, former guys who used to be able to play but couldn't play anymore, like Ichiro and Vernon Wells and Lyle Overbay and Travis Hafner. And they figured out how to get to the playoffs. I saw them get to the playoffs when early in the season. Yeah, I didn't get to the playoffs that year, but they were in it till the end. I saw them make it when Mariano Rivera blew out his knee on the warning track, and that seemed like a deadly thing. And when Derek Jeter popped his shoulder in the first game of the season. So until I see them not make it, I will assume that they'll kind of figure out a way to get through that. And I think in some ways, Jim, they're blessed to play in New York. I know most people think, oh, New York's a tough place to play. But I think because they're under kind of constant scrutiny and by both kind of fan media, but also their history, that they are held to a high standard, it kind of keeps people in this kind of very serious professional next man up bent. And it's existed now from Buck Showalter through Joe Torre through Joe Girardi and now Aaron Boone.
You know, now we're getting to something, really. Joel Sherman joining us, because I was going to say to you next, Joel, like that culture that we're talking about, is it simply in the walls of the clubhouse and it gets passed down, or is this coming from Brian Cashman?
Well, I think it comes from a lot of places, but I know, you know, look, we're more connected to the fans of teams than ever before because of a variety of social medias, notably Twitter. And I watched a fan base in New York act some segment with the, you know who screams the loudest, Jim, is people who are upset with things. And they were very upset that the Yankees spent money to bring back CeCe Sabathia and Brett Gardner. And the reality is that Brett Gunner and CeCe Sabathia were good baseball players last year. They, so far when they've played this year, they've been just good. They aren't as good as they were at their peak, but they're good. But they kind of preached the, for better sense of the word, the Yankee way, and I think they're passing it on to a kind of Aaron Judge and Dellin Betances and other people I expect will be the leaders of the team after this year when Sabathia is retired, and I think there's a pretty good chance that Gardner won't be back again. And I do think having standards of how you expect to play, handle yourself, really do matter in sports. You know, I put, you know, we see the other places where I know one year the Patriots probably won't win the AFC East or the Spurs won't make the playoffs, but like the Yankees, I'm, you know, until I see it, I'm just going to believe that they're all going to be good.
The Patriot way, the Yankee way, the Spurs certainly have their way. I agree. Joel Sherman joining us. Joel, so what about the Red Sox? They worked their way back to 500. In your opinion, have they finally figured it out and gotten back to being the team that won it all last year, or are there still concerns?
Yeah, I think there's concerns because I think they have legitimate depth issues that can be exposed over the course of the year that in some ways haven't really popped up yet. Like the Yankees have had to find a lot of depth early in this season. The Red Sox have used a lot of farm system over the last few years to go out and do what they did last year. I mean, that's ultimately the goal. It's not to be, you know, the champion of the Baseball America prospect rankings. It's to use whatever you have to get a parade and rings. And they did that successfully last year. But I do think it's left them depth vulnerable this season. That being said, you look at the lineup they send out every day. It's a monster. Guys in their prime who you expect to continue to perform at a very high level. They seem to, on the roll here, find some key bullpen pieces or like guys rise to the occasion. Matt Barnes, Heath Hembree, a few others. And they do, again, without serious injury to their rotation, especially since it looks like Chris Sale has figured it out again. And I know they have David Price on the injured list. As long as they don't have substantial injury, they have good starting pitching. And quite frankly, the American League, aside from four, maybe five teams, stinks. So you know, there's just going to be a lot of feasting to get records to a certain place. And I think the Red Sox certainly are capable of feasting on the bad teams and getting their record to a place where come July or August, we're thinking, oh, yeah, they had a tough start, but here they are again. They're going to be a factor the rest of the way.
Got a few more minutes with Joel Sherman. So, Joel, what about the Mets? They've lost 5 out of 6. They're 3 games under 500. I understand it's early, but you and I talked about the Yankees and their culture at length. How would you describe the Mets and their culture?
Yeah, so you kind of put some words in my mouth. As somebody who spends a lot of time around both teams, I get to kind of see these laboratories at work, and I do think the Mets have what I might describe as anti-culture, again, until it changes, that what can go wrong and undermine them tends to go wrong and undermine them. I think they're not helped at all by having this chip on their shoulder about the Yankees. So, look, if they had the 10 greatest years in Mets history in a row starting from today, they're never catching up to the Yankee history. The Yankees had a 4 or 5 decade head start, and they've got 27 championships. So, you know, the Mets could win the next 24 in a row, and they'd still be down 27 to 26. And trying to compete with that, I think, is folly. I think that the Mets tend to think when there's positive things in this town written or said about the Yankees and criticism of them, that it's about a conspiracy instead of reality, which is, again, the Yankees have been really good for a quarter of a century plus, and the Mets have never made the playoffs 3 straight years. They pop up, they'll have 2015 and 16, and you think, wow, they're on their way, and then all of a sudden, you know, 2 steps forward, 2 steps back, they're struggling again. And they definitely have a level of talent this season that should suggest serious contention to at least make the playoffs. But I do think they continue to have some depth issues that they'll have to continue to address over the next few years. so that when they reach down to the minor leagues, there's real answers there. Or, you know, like what one of the things, you know, you see this in L.A., right, with the Dodgers. Think about some of the Dodger success stories, you know, the Max Muncy types out of no place that even the richest team has. You know, the Yankees out of no place. It's Luke Voit. It's Aaron Hicks. It's Didi Gregorius. It's Chad Green. It's hard to find, like the Mets don't do that well. They don't create talent out of nothing. And that's the only way you create depth is if you have good scouting, good analytics, or invest in both worlds, both, and you're able to unearth some stuff that other people didn't see and then develop it to a high end. And the Mets have some depth issues because they haven't done that at a good level.
Joel Sherman, my guest. Joel, how about one more question before I let you go? I'm fascinated by all this, but I've got to ask you about the Marlins because they're already 16 games below 500. Again, it is early, but it seems like they're pretty much eliminated from contention by the end of April, if not before the season. How much of this, then, is on Derek Jeter, and how much of it is on his predecessors?
Yeah, I think the weight is on both of them. Right now, I hope I remember all four names as I do this, right, is you can make a case, Domingo Germán, Chris Paddock, Trevor Williams, and Luis Castillo are four of the best pitchers in baseball right now. They were all traded by the old administration of the Marlins for almost nothing. And if they were sitting with those four pitchers, pretty good chance you might not have even had to trade all the position players. But even if you did, you would have a young core of starting pitching where you'd be saying right now, wow, the Marlins have something to build around. And then this new administration came in and traded away all the best of what was left, which was position players. And clearly to date, and sometimes this takes a long time to gestate, Jim, but to date, they have hardly gotten enough back for what they gave up, especially for Christian Yelich. And, you know, you put those two things together, bad yesterday, bad today, well, you got a really, really bad present and not a great looking near future. And, you know, I think there's a lot of pathology there. It's not too much to go into in a short radio interview, but I think it's going to be hard for them to get over it anytime soon. And I do think a big key to the NL East, and this isn't, you know, splitting the atom, it's been talked about a lot, is you better figure out how to throw up a 15-4 against the Marlins if you're the Phillies or the Mets or the Nationals or the Braves, because they're the easy pickings in the division, and it's a way to kind of get 10 over real easy against one opponent. And if you don't do it and your rivals in the division do it, you're going to be playing from behind.
He is a baseball columnist for the New York Post, an MLB Network insider, and all over that sport. Joel Sherman, my guest. Joel, so good to get caught up. Always appreciate that insight and the energy. Thanks so much, Joel.
All right, Jim. Thank you.
Have a great day, Joel. Appreciate you, and I appreciate that. 1-800-636-8686. All right, so we've spent the entire first hour on the NBA. I will take your thoughts on the Rockets and Warriors, the Lakers. I even used the bottom of the segment, bottom of the hour, for the segment, which is the fattest segment, and I still couldn't get to the end of that Laker take. I have more thoughts on the Lakers, but now I'm looking for you to step up and get in here. You have the phone number. You can find me on Twitter. You can email me. Also, I've got thoughts on smack off storylines. We started this yesterday. I laid out a handful of storylines for Smack Off 25, which, in case you did not know, is now only 43 days away. It is June 21st. I've got more storylines to get into today as well. And I've got some content off the board. Lots of things to get to. And Kyrie is seriously misinformed. And we'll talk more about that. Howard Beck coming up next hour. Quick timeout. Phone calls are next. Casper revolutionized the mattress industry 5 years ago, and now they're doing it yet again. Casper's new hybrid collection combines the pressure relief of their award-winning foam with durable yet gentle springs, so you can sleep in luxurious comfort with resilient support every single night, just like I do. The hybrid is durable for all body types. It has enhanced edge support as well. I love the elevated lift support and the increased airflow for cooling that I get on my hybrid. Like all Casper mattresses, the hybrid ships for free, so you can try it for 100 nights, risk-free, in your own home. If you don't love it, they'll come pick it up, they'll give you a full refund, and they will not ask why. So you want to go to Casper.com, use the code ROME, get $100 towards the purchase of select mattresses. That's Casper.com, code ROME, get $100 off towards the purchase of select mattresses. Additional shipping fees apply for Hawaii and Alaska. See Casper.com/terms for additional terms and conditions. Offer not valid for the essential. Limit one code per customer. Cannot be combined with any other offer.
You're listening to the Jim Rome Show.
All right, so I'm going back. I want to finish my thoughts on the LA Lakers and the clown show they've become. This email says, since the Lakers didn't get Ty Lue, maybe they can sign me. I'm pretty much the same thing. Regards, those dummies that people put in their front seat so they can use the carpool lane. Steven PHX wore Joel Embiid wearing one of those surgical face masks the next game. Typically moronic contribution by you, Steve. Bro, you got to find another show, I think. Like, if you want to listen to me, that's okay. But you got to stop contributing. Did you not hear what I said about Ty Lue? My point about Ty Lue is, how do you disrespect and insult a guy like that that you want as your head coach? I mean, a three-year deal when everybody's getting five-year deals? And not just because everybody's getting five-year deals. It's a guy who won an NBA championship as a head coach. It's a guy that went to the NBA Finals three times as a head coach. The guy can coach. That's the guy you want. And you step at him with a three-year offer. And he can't pick his own staff. I mean, the Lakers. The hell is with the Lakers? And then I laid out, if they couldn't get him, who's left? Jason Kidd, which to me makes sense. Jason Kidd, but if you can't get Jason Kidd, and if you can't get Ty Lue, how are you going to get Jason Kidd? I mean, if you come to Jason Kidd anyway, anywhere near like you did Ty Lue, the same thing's going to happen. And you might think to yourself, yeah, but the Lakers, man, they look so bad. They're such a laughingstock right now. There's no way they would do that with Jason Kidd. But of course they would, because they're the Lakers. That's their thinking. We're the Lakers. So if you can't get Jason Kidd, then maybe go back to Juwan Howard. You know, because Rob Pelinka knows Juwan Howard. And then you just keep stringing this thing out. Like, if they can't get Juwan Howard, and they can't get Chris Bosh, and they can't get Mario Chalmers, and they can't get Mike Miller, then you got to go back to the guys that Cleveland, or that LeBron ran with at Cleveland. Then you're down to my guy, Delonte West, which I would love. Planes, trains, automobiles, better have my donuts.
Planes and automobiles, better have my donuts.
But then again, if you disrespect and insult Delonte, he won't take that job. Then where do you go? Who's next? Booby Clark? Booby ain't having that. J.J. Hickson. My man J.J. Hickson. Oh, wait. He was apprehended for robbery with a knife, as I recall. Planes, trains, automobiles. Armed robbery with a knife.
Donuts.
Knife. Knife. Well, you don't have a knife drop. Get one, Alvy. And then what? Then what? You going to bring back old man Phil Jackson? At this rate, Kurt and Linda will end up offering the gig to Kurt. And then they'll find a way to screw that up, too. Because they've screwed up everything else, starting with the fact that LeBron James fell right into their laps, and they have no idea what to do with him. If I'm LeBron, I'm looking at this train wreck, and I'm heading for the nearest exit. If Ty Lue was LeBron's guy, and that's how they treat him, what kind of a message does that send? And even if he wasn't LeBron's guy, what kind of a message does that send? The clock is ticking on LeBron's career, and the front office is puking all over itself. And again, this is not some garbage team, some garbage NBA franchise that we're talking about. We're talking about the LA Lakers. one of the greatest organizations in North American sports history, and they have turned into an absolute joke. The Lake Show is a clown show. And instead of being the crown jewel of the association and the organization that everybody respected and wanted to emulate, the entire league is laughing at them. And why not? Because it's funny. The Lakers have become the biggest joke ever, and apparently that's not going to change anytime soon. I mean, this is really embarrassing. Justin, 920 in the 715 tweets, Jim O's. Since the Lakers brass are content with mediocrity, they should reach out to Smush Parker to be their head coach. How do you know they haven't? Mike D for three tweets, mentioning Delonte West as the coach of the Lakers this close to Mother's Day is very cold, Rome. Ah! There is that. That would complicate matters, wouldn't it? Maybe Delonte shouldn't be on that list. I don't know. Time heals all wounds. Even that one. You know, I want to pose the question, what do you think LeBron is thinking right about now? But I don't need to. We'll know. We'll know the next time his show airs. Man, they really are embarrassing. I never thought that I'd say this, but you got to bring back Jim Buss. You know, you can only say so many times, Genie is the smart one. Genie is, like, beloved by everybody in the league. I mean, yes and yes. Except I really think that Jim did a better job. Look what's happened to them. I thought that Magic quitting his job as president of basketball ops to return to Twitter so he could hype other guys on other teams was rock bottom. But it wasn't. Oh, and Irv, sorry to say this. You quit one of the best jobs in all of sports so you can tweet, and you suck at Twitter. At DLH 1029 tweets, memo to the Rockets. The Warriors were a championship team before Durant arrived. They were. But is the crew around him the same crew as before he arrived? Are the Splash Bros still the Splash Bros? And all the other supporting parts, are they still as good? We're going to find out. Hey, Rome, our guys played like bleeping giants, too.
Our guys are giants.
Yours? The Trees playing defense against Jay Denver's plane. Aaron in Omaha. Are you doing that, Alvin? Alvin, why are you supporting a take that I was just going to ban a guy from the history of the show for sending? And you're producing it up with Rocky Mountain High. I don't know, clones. I'll just say it one more time. It's not for any of us to say how we go, but there are a few ways I don't want to go. I don't want to be eaten alive by a shark. I don't want to burn to death. And I really don't want to die in a plane crash. Burning. I mean, that's just such bad form and bad karma. Like, I've been on planes. I've had some issues flying, some really scary moments. Like the time I was on a flight flying from Maui to Honolulu, and a giant bird went through the windshield of this little puddle jumper. Really scary stuff. Trust me, I thought I was dying that day. I thought I was dead. When I had blood and guts all over me. So I'm like 10, I think. Blood and guts. I won't do the whole story because you probably know it, but I had blood and guts. Like, I was swimming in blood and guts. Like, somebody took a bucket of blood and poured it on my head. All over me. But I don't feel any pain. And I'm like, I've already died. I'm in heaven. Because I'm covered in blood and I feel no pain. And I'm a kid and I can't figure out what's going on. And I'm in an airplane. I'm dead. Pilot goes, quick, go to the back of the plane. Go to the back of the plane. Hey, Dad, what happened? Am I dead? He's like, no, dummy. That's not your blood. It's a bird. The blood and the guts, it's not yours. It's a seagull. Oh. Anyway, I don't make fun of people. Why would anybody make fun of anybody dying in a plane crash? Morons? Hey, Aaron, you're banned from the show. All right? You can listen, but you've been banned. You can no longer email. A moratorium on you, bro. A moratorium on anybody who mentions John Denver on this program. Unless we talk about America's great folk singers. Well, I just thought something else I want to get into. Nick Saban. He's Batman. Nick Saban and his take on Game of Thrones. And one quick email before I go to break. This email reads, "Happy birthday to me, Jimmy. Kind of surprised I've lived this long, but I guess only the good die young. You said no one over 9 should celebrate a birthday. You may be right, but I love birthday parties. Don't ask me why. For the longest time in my life, I have wanted to invite Janet to my party. Please tell her about it. She's got a way of brightening an event." There's no ding on that one. She's always a woman with class and honesty. And never acts like a big shot. Sincerely, Bill on Long Island. 65 years young today and still tickling the ivories on the piano man. War real estate novelists and politically active waitresses. Unwar me. Crashing my own party. Signed, Den Lyrics. War, Miano Pan, and me making our living with 88 keys, his on the piano, and mine on my belt, so I can access all the classrooms and lavatories. Damn, Lesks. I know you think that's a masterpiece, but it's not. Tripe, bro. Tripe. All right, still ahead. I do want to talk about Nick Saban and the Game of Thrones. And I want to talk about a dude. I'm normally not about this life of these shows, but a dude showed up at the NFL draft and deked everybody. I want to set that up for you. Howard Beck coming up next hour. 1-800-636-8686. No clones. My terrifying bird v. plane story does not give you a green light on Fabio v. Goose tweets. Don't need it. Don't want to see it. I've already covered that too. But I can get you a sports update if you've been waiting for that. Here you go.
Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show on CBS Sports Radio.
It is golf's next major, the world's best eye, the prestigious Wanamaker Trophy. Tiger shooting for back-to-back majors, number 16 overall, the PGA Championship. Next weekend on CBS. All right, so if you live in America right now, you fall into one of three groups. Either you crush Game of Thrones on a weekly basis, or you're crushing Game of Thrones trying to get caught up for the series finale in 10 days, or you have never seen a single episode and you cannot wait for this cultural supernova to burn out so you do not have to hear about it anymore. Now, if I gave you one guess as to which of these three groups that Alabama head football coach and noted red ass Nick Saban were to fall into, which group would you say? Remember, this is a dude so allegedly locked into football that he didn't even know that there was a presidential election back in 2016.
Well, to be honest with you, I didn't even know yesterday was election day. It was so important to me that I didn't even know it was happening.
Yeah, sure you didn't, Nick Tater. Yeah, but fine. Let's go ahead and suspend disbelief and pretend for a second that the highest paid public employee in Alabama somehow missed a presidential election. And then let's factor in that he once said the only TV that he ever watches is the Weather Channel. Knowing that, or at least believing that, would you make this guy a prime candidate to probably be the one person in the entire world who has no idea what Game of Thrones is? But if you thought Game of Thrones had plot twists, wait until you hear this. Because not only does Saban know what Game of Thrones is, he freaking loves it. Not my words, his. And he said as much yesterday on WJOX 94.5.
Oh, I love it. I mean, you know, it had to come to this. Somebody's going to win, somebody's going to lose. That's the way it always goes. Everybody's probably got, you know, somebody that they're rooting for, which is how it goes too. So it'd be interesting to see how it winds up.
Do you have a theory on who will be on the Iron Throne when it's all said and done?
I don't know. I think some kind of way Jon Snow's going to wiggle his way in there, even though he won't try. It'll just end up that way.
Wait, what? Have you ever heard a guy so enthusiastic or that guy so enthusiastic to talk about anything at all? Check out The Nictator breaking down season 8. He's even got a prediction on who's going to sit on the Iron Throne and rule the Seven Kingdoms. I mean, did I just hear what I think I heard? Now, if you watch that show, you can tell by that clip that The Nictator is not chasing to get caught up. He's all caught up. He's already there. His theory on Jon Snow is based on last Sunday's episode, when the Starks learned for the first time that old Johnny Boy has a blood claim to the Iron Throne. So Saban is a fan. That's where he lives. And there's reason to believe that he's been watching since 2011. And not just watching, my man is scouting. Check out the dude telling the world whose living room that he'd post up in with a letter of intent in one hand and a pen in the other.
The White Walkers were the bad dudes, man. I mean, if we were recruiting, we would go north and try to recruit some of those guys.
Holy crap, Nick. Game of Thrones takes 4 days. Remember, this is a guy who melted down after being asked about his quarterback situation last year. But he's got no problem telling us that he tried to recruit the White Walkers to Tuscaloosa. I see you working, Nick. Now let me help you round out the rest of your squad. No question. You got to go and get the Night King to play quarterback after that dime javelin that he threw right into the heart of a dragon last season. That's the kind of accuracy and confidence you need to play SEC football. Then you got to put the Mountain and his brother the Hound on the line to protect him, because nobody's getting through those guys. Your boy Jon Snow, he is the perfect Adam Thielen-like wide receiver. All talent, no diva. And you may as well put Brianna Tarth at tight end to set those picks and blocks for Jon Snow, because she's a known protector of the Starks. And in the backfield, no question, you're going to hand the rock to Aria. No one is more elusive, and she's already proven that she can carry the ball with both hands. Just ask the Night King 2 episodes ago. Your OC, Tyrion Lannister, no doubt. And your pregame entertainment is Daenerys circling Bryant Denny on a fire-breathing dragon. And if Auburn thinks the War Eagle is badass, wait till they come to your house and look up at a freaking dragon patrolling the Alabama skies. Look, you're going to need all the help you can get, Nick, because Dabo Swinney went full Cersei on your ass last season. And unless you want to bend the knee again at King's Landing, you better bolster up that squad with these killers. Now, I don't know if Saban can get everyone to Bama in time for next season, but I do know what he's going to be doing the next 2 Sunday nights. Inhaling Little Debbie oatmeal cream pies and crushing Game of Thrones. Even if it's just to scout imaginary talent. Hey, Nick, Wasn't that fun? Nick, have you ever looked cooler than you did right there? And then in my description of what you did right there? Hey, Nick, see what happens when you show a little personality? You become more likable. You become more relatable. And you know what? The most amazing part of this is people like you, people relate to you, and no one anywhere is questioning your commitment to football because you're having a little bit of fun. You see, you can have your little Debbie and eat it too. You don't always have to be a no-fun red ass. In fact, it's a lot better when you're not. And nobody is questioning your commitment. Keep it up. He also said that he does get inspiration. It's not just entertainment. He gets inspiration from that show and is using that inspiration in some speeches that he's about to make.
Barrett Jones tells us your Friday night speeches were his favorite part of being a player at Alabama. Can you use any Game of Thrones in that?
Oh, I think there's a lot of lessons to be learned in that. I know it's a fictional type, you know, show, but, you know, you sort of get attached to the characters and, you know, some of the perseverance that they go through and some of the things that they do because they are actually competing, you know, with all the sort of...
Hey, Nick, let me jump in on you for a minute. It's not fictional type. It's not a fictional type of show. Bro, there are dragons in the show, all right? It's fictional. It's not sort of fictional or a fictional type or slanted towards fictional. It's fictional.
Fictional type.
Bro, the Starbucks cup on that table, that was real. Pretty much everything else was fictional, including the flying dragons. But at least when this guy's speaking, he's not trying to give somebody the hands. Like, he almost speaks with a smile on his face. You can tell. Or at least not a scowl. Man, he found his thing. He finally found his thing. I like it. Right, Nick? You can have fun. Nobody's questioning whether or not you're spending every second of every day trying to find a way for Alabama to get better. You don't need to be. In fact, it's probably smart not to be. Mix in a little something else. Hey, Rome. Check this out. Hey, Rome. Speaking of Game of Thrones, pretty cool of you to hire Theon Greyjoy to answer your calls. Lord Varys to scroll tweets and Tyrion to run the board. Not sure what it is with you and hiring former TV stars, but you're a good man. Hopefully they don't follow Geller into local government. Signed, Jeb in New York City. Freaking Jeb. One 800 636 8686. What's up, Greyjoy? Wah, wah, wah. Hitman Canadian tweets, I love playing Game of Thrones. Sign Najee. Shut up, Hawk. That was close. Just playing it out. String it out. Hour number two. Still ahead. Kyrie. Not the leader we thought he was. Kyrie so badly wanted to be a one. Kyrie forced his way out of Cleveland because he wanted to be a one, wanted to get his own team, wanted to be the man. And then found out, man, this being the man game's hard, dog. Not what he thought. So now what? If you're the Celtics... If this guy were to leave, would anybody know or care? Or do you do everything you can to keep him? Or do the parts not fit? And what happened to Kyrie? I'm not saying it's all on him, but it starts with him. An NFL draft prank video. Obviously, that's pretty old, but it's good enough that I may still go with it. That good. Howard Beck coming up next hour, too. And I want to know what you clones think is going to happen with Golden State and the Rockets. We know KD is not going to go in Game 6. Looking at that injury, I can't imagine he'd go in Game 7. I'm no doctor. I just play one here in the jungle. But if they have to go without Kevin Durant, where does that leave them? Can they beat the Rockets without Kevin Durant? Do you know? I don't know. I'm not going to pretend to say that I do know. Are the Splash Bros still the Splash Bros? Sean Livingston, Iggy. Can these guys do what they need to do? Because we know that team is not deep. All of that is still ahead.